Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Coming up on this week's show, we'll be reacting to that Sheffield United game and we'll be hearing directly from Steve Bruce. We're going to have a little chat about Elliot Anderson's debut in the FA Cup game against Arsenal. We'll also be dipping into the archives ahead of Monday's return to the Emirates. And we've also got the very first instalment of the great Newcastle United pub quiz, which I must tell you we recorded well in advance of the result of tonight's game. However, before we get into all of that, George, Chris, how are you doing? Chris, are you okay, mate? How's tricks?
I haven't really got many words, which is not great for a podcast, is it? No, that's not true. I will find some. But that was, I mean, we've had some very, 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 very bad days, and this was possibly up there with the very worst of them this evening. So yeah,
wasn't good. George, how are you keeping, mate? How's the sparrow?
Oh, well, Spuggy, that's the life-affirming bit. He's okay, he's doing all right. Yeah, he's better than me. I think this week will be the week of the big release for Spuggy the Sparrow, who's living in my greenhouse. If you don't know what we're talking about there, I'm sorry, I don't have the heart to even talk. I can't smile.
Oh, George. Come on, make your brain work.
I wrote something the other day. I sort of said a thank you to football. And the idea about that was actually something to do with Steve Bruce and what he said about it being morally wrong for football to be played at the minute. And it's just, football's just wrong, full stop, isn't it? Now I just want football. I don't feel any gratitude to football at the moment. I just want it to piss off.
A whole load of bullshit, isn't it? Well, we're gonna get into that, and we're gonna get into the Sheffield United result and all the fallout from that. But before we get into that, let me quickly remind you that you can sign up to The Athletic right now for just $3.99 a month for the first 6 months and enjoy unrivaled Newcastle coverage in 2021, as well as all the ad-free podcasts via the app. Just go to theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Well then, Sheffield United 1, Newcastle United 0. We've lost a game. Sheffield United hadn't won a game this season, 17 games without a win, 2 points on the board, and along comes Steve Bruce's Newcastle and gives them a little boost. Chris, it was pretty awful, wasn't it?
Well, to be fair, I mean, they send out a very, very attacking team, Newcastle. I was tweeting out before the game and sort of reaction to it, and I saw a lot of anger on social media. And it's one of those things where at the weekend against Arsenal, I just didn't understand the team selection, and it almost sort of worked against Arsenal. I mean, Arsenal really bad, but it almost sort of, so Carroll actually played and lasted far longer than I thought he would at the weekend, and having the wing backs who weren't really wing backs didn't actually prove as detrimental as possible. So when I was tweeting out before the game tonight, I was thinking, well, there must be some sort of idea here, some sort of plan which is going
to
be different.
There's got to be a thought behind this, yeah.
Yeah, to play with a 5-man defence, to go to a team who haven't kept a clean sheet all season, haven't won in 20 Premier League matches, if you go back to the end of last season as well, are ridiculously low on confidence. A game that Newcastle needed really to win, but Steve Bruce treated it very much of the opinion. It was clearly a team set up not to lose, but the problem was, as soon as they conceded, they were always going to lose. But even before that, even before the red card, even before the penalty incident, Newcastle did what Newcastle have done far too often, and that was be passive, to cede the initiative to the opposition, to let them have so much of the ball. And then on the rare occasions they got it, Newcastle's passing accuracy was absolutely abysmal once again. I mean, in the end, they finished with a passing accuracy of 68.6%. Second half, that is 60% passing accuracy. It was just awful.
Yeah, they set up, I said this to Chris beforehand, or just as it started, that they'd set up as if they were playing Sheffield United last season. And Sheffield United were excellent last season. They were really good and, you know, they were ferocious and they were physical. And it's like Newcastle sort of went there cowering. You know, they were cowering. And I kind of made a joke on Twitter. I sort of said it's, you know, it's kind of nice of Newcastle to let Sheffield United play themselves into form, but they did. And by the end, Sheffield United were actually looking good. And it was that attitude really that sort of the most distressing thing. And this whole idea of work in progress. I mean, that just has to be demolished for what it is now. Yeah, this is not a work in progress. This is a study in decline, and that's what we're watching. I mean, quite funny or quite interesting. I said that again on social media, and I got a response from a mate of mine, one of my kind of closest friends, who's a Sheffield United fan. He used to live up here in Jesmond, and I met him at Bramall Lane last season, if you remember that incredible smash and grab at Bramall Lane last season. And he just responded to me and sort of said, Newcastle were as played like they played last season. They set up in a similar way, and they just didn't have the luck. You know, it didn't run for them in the same way. And actually, I don't wholly agree. I think it was particularly bad tonight. But I sort of do agree that for all the way through last season, we were discussing how the football did not marry the results. And tonight, the football got the result it absolutely deserved.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I said before the game, when I saw the team come out, and this got a bit of traction on Twitter as well, that it looked like a team which was set up by someone shit scared of losing the game. That's how it felt to me. It felt like an apology of a team to me. It just didn't seem necessary. I think it was far too defensive. And the way we set up in the game, the way we came out and sat back and passively just allowed Sheffield United to have the ball to come onto us. I mean, the possession in the first 30 minutes was something ridiculous, like 80 odd percent Sheffield United. It was astonishingly bad. And I didn't think we could get any worse than what I've seen us this season. And it just keeps happening. But I've said that about five times this season already. I don't think we can get worse than that. And then it is. And again, if not for Carl Darlow making a couple of great saves, we could have been 2-0 down in the first half easily.
Yeah, I mean, that's Newcastle full stop, isn't it? Just when you think. I mean, I was like sort of thinking before the game, how bad can this be? And it's like, oh yeah, okay, it can be really, really shit. I mean, it can be really shit, and it can always be shitter. And there were sort of some funny moments last season because those moments themselves were good. And Bramall Lane was a sort of hilarious one. And I was working that night, so I had to try and make sense of it for The Athletic, and it was very difficult to make sense. But I know that a load of Newcastle fans who were there absolutely loved it, because it's a brilliant away game to be at, because you're spawny and then you win, and there was the ridiculous goal. You know, you could sort of take enjoyment in that, but of course you don't take an enjoyment for a result like that. But the bigger picture is that we're living in this era where enjoyment is drained from everything when there's nobody there, because it's just gone. It's gone straight away, and you're immediately onto the next match. But you know, it's that just was not acceptable. I mean, it wasn't acceptable. It wasn't excusable. You can't wipe away any of it. Obviously, we have to talk about the sending off.
Yes. Yeah, I was just about to mention that. But
yeah, well, go on then.
Well, I was going to say, obviously, Ryan Fraser getting sent off in the first half doesn't help matters, but I don't think we can allow that to cloud just how bad that performance was. I mean, I know the sending off does put teams on the back foot, but we were already there. It didn't force us any further back, did it? It just meant we didn't have as many outlet balls, or we didn't have as many players going forward when we broke, Chris. I don't think the sending off can be used as an excuse this time, can it?
No, I don't think it can, and I saw a lot of people mention on social media, and I sort of agree with them that I didn't think Ryan Fraser looked fully fit either when he was out there. I don't think he'd really contributed that much. I don't think the team shape had worked. I mean, Steve Bruce after the game talked about how he tried something that he tried something a bit different, that he wanted to have as the two false tens, as he called them in Sean Longstaff and Ryan Fraser, and he said we didn't set up that differently to in recent games, and in terms of actual formation, I suppose possibly not, but it was very much back to the Man City approach of sit off and let the opposition have the ball. And whereas against, certainly against Liverpool, at moments against Leicester, and even at moments against Arsenal, it wasn't quite like that. Newcastle actually did try and press a little bit high. There was no pressure put on Sheffield United tonight. It was the complete opposite of that. And what I found so frustrating, and why I don't think the sending off it is an excuse that can be used, is that before, and we've all talked about over the last few days, I spoke to George about it, I spoke to a few colleagues at other media outlets in North East today, and we're sort of discussing tonight's game and saying that if Newcastle win, that is pretty much season over in terms of they'd move on to 22 points, there'd be an 11-point gap to the bottom three, that have wrestled away some of the negative momentum, and yeah, they'd still have to get another 10, 15 points to be safe, but really, given the gap to the bottom three, that would certainly be in a comfortable position. But lose, and suddenly the whole season is gone. In the space of 3 weeks, they've gone out in embarrassing fashion to Brentford. They've struggled, albeit with a very difficult fixture list, and due to COVID situations they've had, but a fixture list which also included playing against Fulham in the bottom three, Sheffield United in the bottom three, West Brom, who they're beating the bottom three, but also Leeds, who they got hammered with, a newly promoted side. And then also they've gone to Arsenal and they've lost and got knocked out of the FA Cup. Yes, it was a reasonable enough performance, but still they've managed to go out of that competition as well. And in the space of those few weeks, the season has dropped off a cliff, and it looks like it doesn't look like there's anything below it to catch it at the moment. Yeah. That's the real concern for me.
I'm eating chocolate coins.
Go for it, George. You deal with this however you want, mate. I was gonna say to you, George, I mean, the last six games we've got 1 point, one goal, and no wins. The form is absolutely shocking. Steve Bruce is coming under immense pressure now from supporters, although he still seems to be getting backed by the majority of pundits on TV, which I find rather strange, but there you go. At what point does this position become untenable? Is it if it's not there already? I'm starting to wonder about this. If the fans were in the ground, surely this wouldn't be going on this long, would it?
Yeah, so, I mean, we don't have that, do we? We don't have the arena of St James's Park or, you know, the away end. And so we're in this sort of strange, it's not a vacuum because we do have social media, but that's sort of all we have. So we have this constant shouting because that's what Twitter's like. I mean, you're either shouting good things or more often you're shouting negative things. So it's this sort of wind tunnel of shouting. That doesn't make any sense, but I mean, I'm sure people know what I mean. And so if you look at it, I mean, I said near the start of the season that if you only look at Twitter, you'd be amazed that Steve Bruce still has a job in the first place. So you sort of have to remove that in some way from your thinking, but it has now got to the point, I think, where you know, you can't, there's no hiding place from this. There is hiding place to a certain extent against Liverpool and Leicester and Arsenal and Man City, because you can point to the fixture list. You can point to the fact that they're still dealing with the after effects of COVID and things like that. But you really can't make an excuse against Sheffield United. And then you do, as Chris says, you put it into the context of what we've seen before. And we have had this disconnect, this huge disconnect between what we're told by people on the radio and the telly and what we're seeing with our own eyes. And I think that's the thing, that with this tonight, it feels like result and performance are together on the same plane. I might be being harsh by that, but I don't think I'm being very harsh, that for a long time we've seen poor performances and better results. And tonight we saw a really poor performance and the result that it deserved. And I think that's the kind of scary thing. As far as Steve Bruce is concerned, I mean, we're not dealing with a rational, logical football club, are we? I mean, that's the thing to say. So yeah. All you can do in these moments, because they don't talk and they don't brief, so you have to sort of put it into historical precedent, and you know that they take really baffling decisions. So whether it's sacking Chris Hughton, you know, from a position of relative strength when they did, to bring in Alan Pardew, to Joe Kinnear, to something that came out of the blue like Kevin Keegan, to sticking with Pardew far beyond the point that he lost the fans,
and Steve McLaren.
Yeah. Sticking with John Carver until end of a season that they only stayed up with on the, you know, the last day of the season after a horrific run of the results, while they waited for Steve McLaren. I mean, you know, and then Steve
only McLaren. Only Newcastle United.
So we know that they're not a sacking club. No. You know, more or less, certainly under this current regime with Lee Charnley where he is. So that's one thing to say. And certainly until relatively recently, the word coming back was that they were kind of satisfied with what Steve Bruce had done. They backed him pretty heavily in the summer, certainly in terms of the players that he wanted or the kind of players he wanted. But as I've said a few times on the pod, there is a slight difference this season, and or there's a couple of slight differences. The first one is the takeover that's been lingering on and is still ongoing in terms of the legal shenanigans that are happening behind the scenes. And for that reason, you know, Newcastle at the moment are worth 300 million quid or 304 million quid, which is the price that Ashley agreed. He is desperate to get out. We know that. He cannot afford Newcastle to be relegated. At the same time, you know, we have a shitstorm of a season where all bets are off, where clubs are losing money left, right and centre, you know, because their stadiums are not full. The jeopardy of going down this season is greater than ever. And, you know, that's something that can't be ignored. And so you would have to hope, and I'm not saying that Steve Bruce should be sacked, you would have to hope that within the club they are having the conversation, they're having grown-up conversations between themselves at this point to say, all right, this is not working. Can we make it better? Can we make it right? How do we do that? What do we do? Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we should probably defer to Chris because Chris has asked Steve Bruce about this.
He has, yeah. I mean, I was going to say, George, you're saying that you're not saying that you think Steve Bruce should be sacked. I personally am now definitely saying I think he should be sacked. I think we've gone beyond the point now where it's dangerous and we're now into really, you know, we're into really dodgy territory here. I mean, like you say, the Premier League survival here is of greater importance this year than it has been for a long, long time. And with that in mind, like you say, the club needs to start thinking some grown-up thoughts and not be, you know, not be petulant and not be silent and start having these conversations. Steve Bruce's future has to be under question now. And Chris, you've spoke to Steve Bruce tonight. You've asked him about his future. How did that go?
Well, it was interesting because it wasn't like post Man City, which came in the aftermath of all the Brentford criticism. That press conference was terse. There was a lot of short answers from him. He was clearly angry with the local media. And actually, tonight, he wasn't dismissive in terms of questions. He did answer some of the questions. I'm sure supporters probably won't like to hear necessarily what he had to say, but it wasn't a hostile press conference so much. But yeah, sort of basically asked him. I said, given the recent performances and certainly the performance tonight, a lot of supporters are suggesting that they believe he should be sacked, and asked him what did he thought of that and also whether he considered his own position.
Let's hear what he said.
You're asking the wrong person for that. I think apart from the last month, which we knew was going to be difficult with the run of fixtures we've had, we give ourselves a decent start to the season. Now, we're not even halfway there yet, and of course, we're all disappointed that we haven't picked up enough points over the last 5-6 games. But I'll still stick with my beliefs that we still have to be a bit pragmatic and accept that, you know, we can't accept the first half performance, don't get me wrong, Chris. We can play better than that, that's for sure. But we still have to maintain a certain way that defensively anyway, which is keeping us in the games that we're involved with.
I don't know where to start with that, to be honest.
Well, I mean, I just want to give some context though, to sort of press conferences in the Zoom world, and so we've had a lot of there's been a lot of people in recent weeks on social media sort of saying that Bruce hasn't asked difficult questions and the like, and I would sort of defend journalists in the sense that it's a lot more difficult to ask questions over Zoom. So for example, there what I had to do was you each journalist, you have to press a raise hand function button to ask a question, and then most of the time, certainly post-game, you don't then get the opportunity to follow up, so you ask your question and then it tends to move on to someone else, so there's not too much of a flow. Now, after I'd asked that question, there was then a follow-up question, and Bruce went on to say that, again, he reiterated that it wasn't up to him, he's the wrong person to ask about his future, but he also said that he understands that, especially watching the first half, we weren't good enough, and at the end of the day, I take responsibility for that because I picked the team. But I understand that a lot of supporters will still not like his answers, they won't think that he's been pressed hard enough, but it's not actually that easy in a COVID world to ask questions and then follow up on them as maybe it once was in other press conferences.
It just feels like a bit of a nothing answer to me, Chris. The answer to your question, it's a very valid question, and part of your question was, has he considered his own future? And he's kind of ignored that a bit, and what he has said has been a bit wishy-washy for me, and it's just not good enough.
All I'd say to that, though, Taylor, is that, I mean, in some ways, I mean, Chris is absolutely right to ask that question. It's a valid question. It's just that managers don't resign. I mean, it just does not happen. Okay, every now and again it does. Ruud Gullit did it and didn't get any compensation and all that. But I mean, that is few and far between in this. So it's almost a game that, I mean, I don't mean it's a game that Chris has to, it's not, but managers do not resign. It's just not what happens. It's not how the game works. And I'm not saying that he's having said that, he did walk away, now that I remember it, he did walk away from Hull when they got promoted to the Premier League because he was concerned about interference, interference in the team and stuff like that. So it's not, so he has done it before. He hasn't, so I've kind of just destroyed my own argument there.
But I know what you're saying though, George. I get exactly what you said.
But it's also, I mean, it's also one of those things, and I will defend him to the extent here, that he will be thinking to himself, right, I'll show you. And, he will have faith in his own. To be a manager, you've got to have an ego the size of a mountain. I mean, you do, because you've got to be tough enough to kind of withstand all that sort of stuff. But you also have to be the person that makes the decisions. You make easy decisions, tough decisions. You're the person that all falls on. And you have to be, you have to have a proper ego to do that. And, this is why, I'm digressing, but this is why there'll always be a manager that will sign the problem player. And I remember Bobby Robson talking about this. He's, because you're the person that thinks you'll tame them. And in the same way, when managers look at a team struggling near the foot of the table and they're coming into a job, they think to themselves, I'm the one that can turn this around. And very often they're wrong. But he'll be thinking now, right, I'll show you. And I can, I've got this experience and I can turn it around. And I think it does tend to be, it's more like what happened at Hull with Bruce or Keegan at Newcastle the second time. In fact, not far off the first time when the club had become a PLC and was a very different sort of beast to the one that he was used to. It's that type of thing that persuades managers to walk away rather than results.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah. Was there any positives tonight at all, Chris? Was there anything that was positive tonight?
Carl Darlow again, but we said that too often.
Yeah, you can't have that now. We've used that up.
No.
We've used up all the Carl Darlows.
I mean, just a slight point, and this is the game was completely basically gone by then, but I still am flabbergasted that Billy Sharp wasn't dismissed for what was a horrendous challenge. Yeah. I mean, that was cynical and was bad. And I do have some sympathy for that, but not in terms of that shouldn't have changed the overall result. I mean, there's a lot of stuff about the penalty and VAR and maybe Newcastle were slightly unfortunate in the way they ended up conceding, but I have no sympathy in the sense that I just think that they deserve to lose, and therefore I can't get too angry about that one.
What was the VAR decision last season? Remind me. I was there for it. But
that was offside. That was Shelvey. Whether
Carroll
he was
flicking the ball on, yeah. And Shelvey ran on and kept playing, and the linesman flagged, and Shelvey put the ball in, and then it got checked,
right.
Didn't it?
And I remember it was Chris Wilder spoke for what felt like hours afterwards about sort of saying he didn't recognise the game anymore and all that kind of stuff. And it's actually, it's not too dissimilar from what Steve Bruce has talked about tonight in terms of the...
I mean, I don't recognise the game Steve Bruce is playing at the minute, I'll be perfectly honest
with
you.
No, I mean, and I think that is the problem. I mean, joking aside, we've all looked at this game coming up and said, it'll be Newcastle. Newcastle will be the one that, that give them the first win. And it's so depressingly... predictable that should have happened. And I think the thing is that it is bad. It's really, really bad. And I'm feeling sort of sad and angry and all that. But part of me is also feeling a bit dead inside because this is on a par with what we've seen far too often. This is the football we're seeing. It's not like they've been playing okay and suddenly there's this dreadful, terrible result that makes your stomach stink and you stink. What's happened? I'm in a rap. I'm doing a rap.
Sometimes your stomach does stink, but that's the
sometimes you
don't. Altogether.
And it's not like that. It's not the shock of it. It's not like it's a shock, is it? I mean,
no.
Sheffield United were favourites to win, and they won.
Yeah.
So, and it's just, it is just that thing, that cold feeling inside that this is how it is. And this was a particularly bad version of it, but it's more or less like this. It's on a par with this far too often. And yeah, I think people are craving, people are just craving something else. And it does get to, and when I said before, I wasn't saying that Steve Bruce should be sacked. I think it's a perfectly valid, you know, conversation. I think it's, my fear, I suppose last season, my fear was kind of, well, all right, so a lot of people don't want Steve Bruce, but seriously, honestly, let's have that conversation about what you think this lot would do, who they would bring in next. And I think that, I think last season, when results were, again, far better than performances, you know, I think that response was okay. I mean, a lot of people didn't like it, but I think that response was okay. There does come a point, though, where you have to sort of say, actually, pretty much anything might be better than this, or it just needs something different. And, you know, please, no, not joking here, but, I mean, do you know what I mean? I mean,
nobody and that, needs that.
No, that having somebody experienced, competent, again, people would question some of these phrases, you know, that maybe that was the best that Newcastle were going to get last season, and they just had to be guided through. And by the end of that season, Newcastle were guided through, but this feels like something different now. And so it is, you know, it feels really uncomfortable, but that discomfort is, it's not the fault of fans. It's not the fault of, you know, them at all. They're responding to what they're seeing and what they've been served up month after month after month.
Is this a relegation fight now, Chris?
Yes. I mean, the only thing saving grace for Newcastle at the moment is that certainly, I mean, the bottom two, even though Sheffield United won tonight, the bottom two are effectively cut adrift. But yes, Newcastle now have to view this as a relegation battle.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Ugh, it's all gone a bit shit, hasn't it?
Yeah, and bearing in mind this was supposed to be our cheery podcast when we changed things around a bit. And
the
we,
podcast rebranding, we picked a great week to do that, didn't we?
Looks like I picked the wrong week to give up smoking.
I actually have stopped drinking as well. I packed in drinking a couple of weeks ago.
Poor
and, and the Ryan Fraser red card happened tonight, and I just looked towards the kitchen door and thought, I could go and get a beer, couldn't I? Who's going to, you know, no one's going to see. No one's going to tell me off. I didn't do it. I held off. I was being strong. Well, let's move on. Let's try and introduce a little bit of levity into the podcast. Like we said, we did try a little rebrand this week. We thought we'd stick a few new bits and pieces in there, a few little features to get your ears burning, and you can listen to some different stuff with a little quiz, George versus Chris. And I will reiterate, we recorded this afternoon at 3 o'clock when everything seemed rosy in the world. Before Newcastle had lost to Sheffield United. So if you are feeling a bit down in the dumps, ladies and gents, please pull a chair up and listen to George slowly lose his mind as we ask him questions. Here we go. So Newcastle United crashed out of the FA Cup on Saturday at Arsenal. Was it Saturday? It feels like forever ago. It was Saturday, wasn't it, Chris?
I thought we covered Arsenal last week. I thought we covered this defeat in advance.
Yeah,
I did that perfectly.
We did mention that it was going to be a defeat, and we were right. So yeah, they crashed out the FA Cup to Arsenal on Saturday, but one of the bright sparks of that game in an otherwise dull afternoon was the debut of young Elliot Anderson. A fantastic showing from the young lad, and great to see some talent on the pitch coming through from the academy, Chris.
It was great to see Elliot Anderson come on, and he was really was a positive from that game. I thought in general, if we're just going to quickly talk about the match, for certainly the second half, I thought Newcastle played well, possibly should have and could have won it, given Andy Carroll
with those sitters, man.
I know.
Oh, they are goals if they fall to Callum Wilson, aren't they? I feel like they might be, you know.
You'd have thought so, yeah. I mean, you'd like to think for most people there would be. But anyway, I mean, Elliot Anderson himself had an opportunity when he came on. But yeah, he came, I think it was 9 minutes to go. And he's been someone who's been in and around the first team, training with them since September. He's partly benefited from the situation that's been brought about by COVID, in the sense that the under-23s are completely separate from the first team now. Yeah. And so Anderson was brought up to train with the first team. And he's there, A, on merit, but also B, because he can't necessarily fleet between the two different quote-unquote bubbles. He has played for the 23s in some matches, but he's travelled the games separately. He's been kept separate from them, except playing during the matches. And Bruce said a few weeks ago that it was inevitable that he was going to make his debut. He'd been that impressed with him, and he's really made an impression actually on Alan Saint-Maximin during training,
right?
I don't know if that's a positive or a negative in terms of him taking him under his wing, but the two of them, yeah, Saint-Maximin's really, really taken to him and likes what he's seen from him. He's an 18-year-old attacker midfielder, long been seen as someone who was going to break into the first team at some stage. The Longstaff's obviously broke through in the last couple of years, but Anderson, from about the age of 12 or 13, there was really high hopes for him, and that he had something a bit different about him. His granddad, Jeff Allen, played in was part of the 1969 Fairs Cup winning squad, so there is clearly the genes
are very good
links there. But it's been a really, really positive thing to see over the last few weeks, to just have something to hold on to. And then, given Newcastle's paucity in terms of the lack of creativity in midfield, Anderson does bring something a little bit different. He does like to try things. He looked very comfortable on the ball. And
yes,
I think that actually those midfield issues have also benefited him. And that's probably why we may see more of him in the coming days and weeks, hopefully.
I didn't think the occasion got to him or anything either. He looked like he fitted in straight away, George, didn't he? He was on the pitch. He was getting stuck in. He was putting his mark on the game.
Yeah, one of the things you look for when a kid comes through into the team is to see what sort of attitude they have, and as well as the actual quality he's got, which I think we could see. He just didn't have any fear, did he? There was no holding back. There was no sense that he was overawed by the occasion, and that side of it was very encouraging.
For me, I mean, I hate doing this because I know this is what happens whenever a young player comes through. They get compared to an established player and they say they are a young so-and-so. But the second he came on, the first name that popped into my head, the way he runs, the way he carried himself, the way he was playing the ball was I remember watching Ross Barkley when he was young. And I remember seeing him play and thinking, wow, actually, he's got a touch of that kind of bullish nature about him. And I always thought Ross Barkley had a bit of the gazzers about him when he was younger as well. So I know it's lofty comparisons, but that was the instant that he came on and he started getting the ball and moving around. I thought, wow, he's got a touch of the Barkleys about him, Chris.
I can see where you come from, and actually it's an interesting comparison to make, just in that obviously we're not talking about, we're not trying to get too far ahead of ourselves, but Bruce in the summer did want Ross Barkley, and we've seen a lot on that recently about how he wanted a player like that. And in some ways, it may be to Anderson's benefit if Newcastle can't get another midfielder in this month, because that's the type of player they're looking for, someone who's a little bit creative. But if Anderson can show himself to be someone who can provide something like that, then, and if Newcastle fail to bring in anyone in the loan market, and they've had issues so far in trying to do that, then maybe he will benefit even more from that. When you said to George there, did it look like he didn't look overawed by the occasion? Well, actually, I spoke to someone close to him after the game on Saturday, and basically it was amazing to hear what Anderson sort of said after the game to them, and that he certainly didn't seem overawed by it. And he almost has that naivety where I don't think he quite understands the magnitude of what he's just achieved. And in terms of the step up, he didn't find it to be a huge step up. He thought the intensity was different, but he still felt he could make that step up, and not in a sort of arrogant way, just that he is that talented, that that really he did look very comfortable out there. And it's only 39 minutes or whatever we saw of him, and he hasn't made his Premier League debut yet. I hope that we will see more of him in the coming weeks and months. But in a season, and well, two seasons really, where we've seen very little to be positive about, I think Elliot Anderson breaking through and just bringing that has been such a positive. And I wrote a big piece on him back in November, because I knew it looked highly likely he was going to make his debut at some point, and spoke to people who know him well. And he benefited, actually, strangely, from either side of lockdown. He basically grew, I think it was 4 inches during the lockdown period. So he was about 5'5".
In height.
Yes, just to clarify.
Just checking out, you know.
And that growth spurt really served him well, because although he was, there wasn't concerns necessarily that physically he was going to struggle to make this step up. It's just the fact that he did sort of grow into his body a little bit more really gave him the opportunity for when they came back and they were looking at who are we going to have in and around the first team squad, who are we going to bring up from the 23 so that we've got extra bodies, who is going to be able to cope with that. And Elliot Anderson really benefited from that. And so he's, as I say, someone who's there's been a lot of excitement around for a long while. And so hopefully this isn't just a little flash from him. And my understanding is that there's a lot of Championship clubs interested in taking him on loan. Anderson himself would prefer to stay certainly for the next couple of weeks and see whether he can get more game time rather than necessarily rush to go out on loan. I think Newcastle will take a little bit of time, see how they go in the transfer market before making a decision as to whether they think they need to send him out or whether he might get more game time between now and the end of the season.
Have you had a lot of coffee today, Chris? You're talking very fast. I can tell you're excited about this kid. Absolutely a mile a minute. I mean, one of the things Newcastle have struggled with a little bit this season is ball retention and taking care of the ball and being sort of more determined in possession to keep hold of things. And I thought when Anderson came on, he looked like he wanted to try things, but he also looked very comfortable on the ball, George. He looked like he was sort of, like he knew what he was doing, like he had a bit of confidence in himself. And whether that's just the youthful exuberance and just getting on with it, and he's not jaded by by giving the ball away on the edge of his box every other week for 6 years. But he just cracked on, didn't he? It was great.
Yeah, I mean, this, we've talked about it so many times. This is a team that absolutely despises the football. And, you know, they're not afraid to show it. So it's definitely encouraging and nice to see someone who wants time on the ball, who wants to be on the ball, isn't afraid to be positive about it. I mean, that's another criticism of this team that we mention frequently, that so much of the play goes sideways or backwards. I'm all for that bit of forward momentum that someone like Anderson can bring. I was listening intently there to Chris, but then also your sort of comparison with Ross Barkley is interesting, because I can't remember the game or the occasion, but I remember he was at St James's for Everton, played absolutely brilliantly, and there were those comparisons with Gazza were made then, and obviously they were made because of where Barkley was playing that day. And obviously that's a very big sort of mantle to put on anybody's shoulders, and Barkley probably hasn't kind of fulfilled that, but you know, that's the kind of thing we long to see as Newcastle fans, one of our own coming through, being able to sort of dictate the play. And you know, yeah, hopefully he can carry on like that.
Chris, you're obviously very excited about this young man. Is there any other academy talent knocking about that we should be keeping an eye out for on the radar?
Well, in terms of people who may play this season, I don't think we're likely to see anyone else really break through and join the first team. But next season, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Kel Watts, a defender who's out on loan at the minute at Plymouth. And I call him a defender when actually he can play midfield. And when he was younger, he played up front. He's very, very versatile, and he's very talented. He's a ball-playing defender. He's been playing, I think, in a back three for Plymouth, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with him going forward. There's also the likes of Tom Allen. But in terms of the younger ones who they're excited about for the future, Joe White is a younger attacker midfielder, 18-year-old from Carlisle, who Bruce has mentioned a couple of times this season that they've really got high hopes for him. And also Bobby Clark, 15-year-old.
That's a proper footballer's name, that, isn't it?
Well,
that is proper footballer's name, Bobby Clark, inside right for Folchester United.
Well, when your dad's Lee Clark as well, you've got quite the shoes to fill in. Exactly. So he's one who he's only 15, but he has played for the under 18s, and I think he may have even he may have even been pushing for the under-23s if football hadn't been disrupted as much as it has over the last 12 months, and he's certainly one that sees positive future. I know a lot of other clubs elsewhere have taken a keen interest in Bobby Clark, looking at his sort of situation. So really it would be... there are some talented players in Newcastle's academy, but obviously we know the issue that has been over the last decade or more is actually bringing them through and making sure they make that step up. Hopefully the Longstaffs have shown that it can happen and that we'll see more from Anderson, and the pathway is starting to open up, but it's still in the early stages of that.
This is the thing, isn't it, George? The academy has been, you know, producing drips and jobs for a good few years now, and with the exception of the Longstaff, there's been a bit of a dearth in talent, hasn't there, over the last few years? There's not an awful lot has came through, besides Andy Carroll, of course, Paul Dummett, players like that, Stephen Taylor, but apart from that, there hasn't been an influx of youth, has there?
No, I think one of the problems has been the way the club has been run and managed. The ownership did put great store, you know, did put great store on having top academy status, but there's been far too much change at the top of the academy over the years and not enough stability, and it's just not been seen as a place where kids are going to thrive and then get into the first team. And so that's been a real problem for the club, particularly when clubs like Sunderland and Middlesbrough have been producing players who either for their own first teams or for others. And yeah, hopefully this is the sign of better to come. There has to be that link there. So yeah, fingers crossed there's more of this to come.
Fantastic. Well, I'm sure that's a one for us to keep an eye on, his development, and I'd be amazed if we didn't see more of him in and around the first team. But there's still time for us to dip in the archives ahead of another trip to the Emirates. We're going to get into that right after this. This is a brand new feature for us. We're going to be pitting the wits of two of the Northeast's top journalists that we're able to get hold of in the first of a new series of the Newcastle United pub quiz. This week, ladies and gentlemen, it is George v. Chris. Are we ready for this, chaps? George, you've seemed a bit... you have a bit of trepidation about this old quiz malarkey. You're not good with the memory?
I absolutely hate quizzes to the very core of my being, so I'm really looking forward to this new feature.
Good. Yeah, I'm glad we've done this. And Chris, you're a walking encyclopedia, aren't you? So you shouldn't have too much trouble with this.
Yes, and the fact that George hates them so much makes it even more sweet that we get to do this every week, so I'm delighted.
Just wait until the week when George is the quiz master. Honestly, it's going to be an absolute nightmare, isn't it? It'll be carnage.
Well, we are going to have to swap it around, because I simply refuse to be the person getting answers wrong every week.
I've made the questions this week pretty difficult, I'll be honest, and they're all based around the 2010-2011 season. Can you remember that far back, George?
2010-2011 season. Yes, so that was the first season Newcastle were back in the Premier League after promotion.
Chris did a big piece on this not long ago, so the stuff should be fresh in the memory.
No, we didn't. We did a big piece on the Championship season.
Ah, oh, that's right, yeah. My mistake.
But never mind, this was only a year later. And George did cover the team professionally at that stage, whereas I didn't. So really, George should have an advantage, but...
it's not going to be the case, is it? Right, let's crack on. Question number one. There's three questions each, by the way. Your second question is multiple choice. And when we get to the end, there's going to be a tiebreaker if it's all square. Here we go. So question one, Chris, this is for you.
Okay.
Which Spanish team did Newcastle United beat 5-3 on penalties in pre-season?
This wasn't the year the game was called off. That was a different year. That was Fiorentina, a different year. Deportivo.
I might know
that. Deportivo?
Oh, yeah, he's right.
It was Deportivo La Coruña. Well done.
Damn it, I knew that.
Right, George, your first question. Newcastle United lost 2-0 to Blackpool in September of 2010. Blackpool's first goal was a penalty. Who scored that penalty for Blackpool that day?
Who scored for Blackpool? Oh,
who scored the penalty, yeah.
I don't know, but I think that's, if they were in the Premier League, that must have been Charlie Adam.
It was Charlie Adam. Well done. Excellent. Lovely stuff. Process of elimination there. Question number two for you, Chris. How many different league and cup goal scorers did Newcastle United have in 2010-11? This is multiple choice. Was it A, 15, B, 12, or C, 13?
League and cup. Sorry, did you say that?
League and cup, not pre-season.
So 15, 12, or 13.
And we're not including own goals, of which there were one.
13.
That's correct. C13, yes. That's correct answer. Well done. Oh, little celebration there from Chris Wolf. Okay, George, your question, multiple choice. Newcastle United beat Aston Villa 6-0 in their first home game of the season. What was the attendance of that game? Was it A, 43,546? Was it B, 50,334? Or was it C, 48,245?
I think that was noticeable because it was low, actually. And that quite often happens in Newcastle's first game when people are still on some holidays or whatever. So it's not the 50,000. I will say A, 43, whatever it was, 1,000.
A43,546 is the correct answer. Well done. Fantastic stuff.
Wow, this is extraordinary.
Hey, George, for someone who hates quizzes, you're not doing too badly here, mind. Okay, question number five, and this one's for Chris.
I'm also a genius. Don't ever forget that. I'm just a genius with a terrible memory.
And so modest with it as well. Chris, Newcastle famously beat Sunderland 5-1 on Halloween. Which three Newcastle players went into the book during that game? You have to get them all right.
If he gets this right, he's cheating.
Three Newcastle players are in the book.
No Google.
Stephen Taylor.
Okay, go on.
Kevin Nolan and Danny Simpson.
You got one out of three right there. You got Danny Simpson right. So no point for you there for that one. George, any idea who the other two might have been?
No. Carroll.
Yes.
Coloccini.
No. Check Tiote was the other one. Come on, Check Tiote.
Check Tiote, of course, yeah.
He used to walk on the pitch with the yellow card, that lad. Come on. George, if you get this right,
well,
you win.
James Perch arrived that summer, didn't he, and got booked in every single one of his first, whatever it was, five games, was it?
First five league games, five yellow cards. Still the only player to have done it.
Yeah.
And he's very proud of it, brilliant. As well. He's very proud of that record.
Yeah.
He also got two in pre-season as well.
Brilliant.
He told me when I interviewed him, he said, I watch at the start of every season to check that I retain that record. He says, I don't want to lose it.
I bet he's got a little plaque up above the fireplace. Fantastic. Well, George, if you take this, you steal and you will win. Who did Alan Pardew say this about? He's come into the side and he's been brilliant. You get different characters in the game. He's not one who gets too fiery and it's helped us. He's a cool footballer and that helps us on days like Saturday.
I mean, again, I don't know the answer to that, but I can only assume it was someone who was the opposite of what Alan Pardew said, because most things tended to be the opposite of what Alan Pardew said. So I'm going to guess at Niall Ranger.
Definitely not. Definitely not Niall Ranger. Oh. Chris, any ideas who that might have been?
No, I don't know. Actually, I don't know this one. I'm going to guess at Leon Best, but I don't know.
No. He was talking about Mike Williamson. Yes, indeed.
No, so that was actually, he made sense. I thought that was going to be something stupid, but no, it wasn't.
No, that was actually spot on, wasn't it? That leaves the score at 2-2. I've got a tiebreaker question for you here. You both get a guess at this. The nearest one wins, okay? What was Newcastle United's goal difference at the end of the 2010-2011 season? Chris?
Oh, God's sake.
It's very rarely positive, so I'm not going to suggest it was positive. I'm going to go for -6.
-6. George, what's your guess?
Hang on a second. So -6. So let me just... I have to think about my tactics here. So if I say -5,
we finished
closest.
12th.
All right, remember? -5.
George, that makes you the winner. The actual goal difference was -1.
Get in.
There we go.
Well, this was my last appearance on Pod on the Tyne. I will not be back. I will not put myself through this again.
I've bluffed my way through yet more of my career. This is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
You really did. You absolutely...
Yeah, I won't...
Charlatan.
I won't be... I've shithoused my way through that
you
quiz.
Are.
I'm also not going to appear on this podcast again, simply so I can retire as champion.
Well, it'll just be me next week then. Nice one.
Excellent.
Chris, anything to say for yourself in that disgraceful display?
I apologise to everyone out there that I've let them all down, and that I've fed this ego even more, and I apologise for it.
You have. You've let me down, you've let George down, but most importantly, Chris, you've let yourself down, haven't you?
I like to think I've used my sort of natural ability there in that, actually. I would like to say there's no knowledge there. I've got no... Yeah, I sort of knowing about Newcastle, if not knowing the specifics of these questions. I think I've done quite well, like the attendance thing. I'm quite proud of that answer.
Well done for blagging your way through that, George. Lovely stuff.
Cheers.
More of that next week. Cheers. Let's have a look forward to Arsenal. Here we go.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Right then, let's move on, ladies and gents. We're going to move into another new section here. We're going to look back into the annals of history, the archives of pain as Newcastle fans. And just linking it back to that quiz, we're going to have a look at Newcastle v Arsenal at the Emirates, 7th of November 2010. And I believe we have a little clip to play.
Barton's free kick. Oh, it's a terrific header and they have scored! That man, it had to be him, didn't it, who gets it? Andy Carroll with a towering header to beat Fabianski and give Newcastle a dream lead here right at the end of the half.
Oh, literal chills, lads. I don't know about you. Absolute chills. Should turn the heating up. That was fantastic stuff. Andy Carroll rising high above Lucas Fabianski to nod the winner at the Emirates in 2010. Andy Carroll at his absolute pomp there, wasn't he, George? Right in the middle of his prime. Fantastic header.
He was astonishing. Yeah, we have sort of prepared this little bit as opposed to the quiz, which came as a bit of a shock. So I mean, I have sort of looked back at this match, and I think there are a few astonishing things about it when you think about it. A, you know, Newcastle won at Arsenal, which didn't happen very often then. I think it was the first time they'd done that for 10 years or so. And Carroll was just this sort of machine. It was the same in the Championship season, but definitely this season, you just saw him get better with every match. And, you know, Fabianski, aka Flappy Hansky, I don't think he dealt with Barton's free kick leading up to that very well, but Carroll was just this sort of machine, and terrifying in the air and good on the deck and learning and growing. And there was so much sort of around, you know, there was loads happening around him sort of off the pitch at the time.
Yeah.
But there was also sort of stuff happening around the team too, including Chris Hughton sort of mind-bogglingly being under pressure internally at the club, but no, Carroll. I mean, Carroll. You know, we've seen this sort of different, diminished version of him at Newcastle since he's come home, and I think that perhaps that makes us forget a little bit just what an astonishing footballer he was, and particularly for Newcastle then, and of course, not too long after that he would be joining Liverpool too. But no. Yeah, brilliant. He was just brilliant. He was unstoppable.
I think it was pretty obvious that season that a lot of defenders who he came up against hadn't came up against anything like Andy Carroll before, or maybe even since. What the hell is this crazy 6'5" man horse that's galloping towards me and trying to head me into the goal along with the ball? He was an absolute terrifying prospect for defenders, wasn't he, Chris?
He was, and he was not only strong in the air, though, he was also very good on the deck, and so therefore it wasn't as if he was sort of a one-trick pony or whatever. He was very, very difficult to defend against, and he had an absolute hammer of a left foot. And we saw, as George said, in the second half of that championship season, he started to really grow into his own. In the first half of the 2010-11 season, he was arguably the best striker in England, certainly up there with them. And he ended up getting into the England squad and made his debut, I think it was that November, so it was around about the time that he scored this goal at Arsenal. And it was... I think that was part of the reason why Newcastle really did surpass expectations that year. Certainly the first half of the year when Carroll scored and he got the hat-trick early on against Aston Villa, if I remember correctly. And I just think it is such a shame. And when he came back, there was so much... You couldn't help but feel that nostalgia, and we haven't seen much of it. I mean, for large parts of the game against Arsenal on Saturday, actually, he certainly wasn't the Andy Carroll of 2010-11, but there was sort of signs of what he could bring other than shooting, obviously. And so I just think that for someone, that the fact that there was so much pride as well that he'd come through Newcastle's academy, he was a homegrown talent, and he really did wear the mantle of the number nine very well, and it didn't rest heavily on his shoulders. If anything, he grew when he wore it, and it's just such a shame in many ways looking back, and you can, I think Carroll himself might argue that he maybe benefited and matured from leaving Tyneside, and whether that would have been the best from it in that sense. But football wise, you just wonder if he'd stayed at Newcastle where his career may have gone, because injuries have really affected him, obviously, and he's never quite reached those levels. But for about 12 or 18 months, he was absolutely fantastic.
I mean, that win at Arsenal left Newcastle pretty high up in the league, 9th or 10th, and inexplicably Chris Hughton sacked just 3 weeks later.
There was this really strange sort of attitude at the club at the time that they needed somebody who was more Hollywood. I mean, I remember speaking to Derek Lambia sort of off the record, having an off-the-record chat with him, and kind of feeling very fearful about that they wanted... I mean, it's strange when you consider the club now, but they wanted attention on them because they wanted more TV games, and they wanted kind of excitement and adventure and that sort of stuff. And Chris was seen as a safe pair of hands. He'd done well to get them sort of back up. I mean, I'm not talking about what I think about him, because I think he did astonishingly well. He was the glue that held the club together during a kind of astonishingly difficult and traumatic period. But that's how he was seen inside, sort of, you know, that it was boring. And, you know, they'd had that the week before that was the 5-1 over Sunderland, wasn't it? I think. And then they go to Arsenal and win. But yeah, there was this sort of narrative, to use that crap word, around the club at the time that he was sort of under pressure, and it seems ridiculous now. It was their first season back in the Premier League, and they were doing really well, and there was something to sort of build on. And yeah, it was I mean, Alan Pardew came into sort of the opposite of fanfare. He immediately showed that he knew how to set a team up, and you know, we saw that kind of very quickly, albeit, you know, he was effectively coming from Southampton, who were in the third tier when he was there. But his sort of regime started by saying, Andy Carroll is not for sale, Andy Carroll is going nowhere. And then, of course, Andy Carroll coming in. So he was sort of on the back foot. He was on the back foot from the start. And, you know, we talk a lot about Steve Bruce and his relationship with fans, and At the time back then, there was this sort of absolutely witless load of bollocks about Newcastle fans not being able to accept anybody as manager unless he was a Geordie or, you know, one of their own or, you know, whatever it was. And Chris Hughton was absolutely loved and respected by supporters, and he did a great job.
He certainly did. Well, here's hoping that Andy Carroll can rekindle some of that 2010-11 form when Newcastle visit Arsenal at the Emirates this weekend coming. Well, chaps, thanks as always. I think we're going to wrap things up there. Have either of you got any pieces out at the minute for the subscribers to look out for?
Well, after the Arsenal game, I did a piece about how Newcastle do not score goals and trying to look at basically, I mean, that's not new information. Everyone knows that. It was basically that the reason that it was new information was I was trying to look at why they don't score goals. And actually, there's some interesting statistics that Opta have a thing which they call quote unquote big chances. And it's effectively chances that teams create, which you'd expect them to score. And Newcastle have the best conversion rate in the Premier League, but they create so few chances that they don't score many. Yeah. So essentially, the part of the problem is they just don't get the ball into the box. They don't get high enough up the pitch, and Steve Bruce is trying to address that, and hopefully it will bear fruit eventually. But yeah, Newcastle's lack of goals and what needs to be changed for that is a piece that I've got on there at the minute.
Excellent. How about you, George?
No.
Good. Right, that's that sorted. Thanks as always, gents. Cheers. Thank you very much for your time. And thank you all for listening. Please remember to hit subscribe so that you don't miss a show. Leave us a review and a rating if you're feeling particularly generous. And we'll see you next week on Pod on the Tyne. Take care of yourselves. See you later.
The Athletic.